The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by 1st of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth. James, we've had Prime Minister's questions today and Keir Starmer articulated a charge that has been growing in recent weeks when it comes to the government. Talk us through it.
I thought this was actually Keir Starmer's best PMQ since becoming Labour leader. He had a potent charge, which is that it's one rule for them and another rule for the rest of us. And he kind of wove the Matt Hancock story into that. And I also thought it was effective on a technical level. I think one of the things that Keir Starmer often lacks at PMQs is a sense of theatre and a bit of swagger. And I think what you saw today was he had a bit of theatre and a bit of swagger in the first few questions. You know, he nailed the point that you wrote about on Coffee House on Monday, which is, you know, Boris Johnson now wants to suggest that Matt Hancock was sacked when he clearly wasn't sacked. He clearly resigned. And at that time, Number 10 were very keen to say that the resignation was Matt Hancock's own decision. And then I thought what he did effectively was to change pace. So Boris Johnson got into kind of classic Boris Johnson defensive PMQs mode, you know, vaccine rollout, you couldn't sack Angela Rayner, this is Westminster bubble. And then Keir Starmer's like, right, let's talk about the case of this 20-year-old man who died in hospital with leukemia, who could barely see his family as he died the day before those photos of Matt Hancock and his aide breaching social distancing, to put it mildly. And I think that that was an effective technique. I thought the change of pace that you don't normally see from Keir Starmer. I think the irony of it all is that was Keir Starmer's most effective PMQ's performance. And yet, if Labour, as Westminster expects, and people who've been there expect, loses the battle in Spen by-election tomorrow, then his leadership will be in its worst crisis yet. But it was undoubtedly Keir Starmer's most effective, I think, parliamentary performance as leader of the Labour Party.
And James, it's interesting this charge has been increasing. Now, clearly the fact that Matt Hancock was caught breaching COVID restrictions has accelerated it. But it isn't the Matt Hancock incident alone. There have now been a series of things as we've almost entered this half and half easing of restrictions. So you have rules that everyone has to follow, but then you have the events research programme, which means that some events are exempt. The fact we're going to get a full capacity Wimbledon, limits on life events in terms of, you know, various rules. And also you have the situation in schools, which I think is driving many parents across the country mad in the sense that lots of children are ultimately, yes, having to self-isolate at home because one person in the class has got COVID, but also just suffering disappointment and uncertainty on school trips, on birthday parties, things being cancelled at the very last minute. And I think it's causing quite a lot of distress when then people see, you know, lots of, even if you think of Wembley last night, yes, it was not full capacity, but people look at those full crowds, people singing the anthem, and there is just a sense that perhaps fairness has gone out of the system. So is that affecting government thinking?
In the explicit way, in that, you know, people who are coming here to make significant economic deals are exempt from quarantine. You know? So in that level, fairness is out the door. You know, this isn't lorry drivers being exempt because, you know, they are bringing essential supplies in and out. This is people, you know, being exempted to bring economic value to the country. I think this is one of the reasons why July the 19th has to happen for the government. And I think also, you know, next week, as I say in the politics column this week, we will get the plan for July the 19th. We won't get confirmation that July the 19th is going ahead, but we'll get a plan for what the reopening will be. And I think it will be undoubtedly at the maximalist end of the spectrum. And I think the government's essential bet is that as these restrictions wind down, this is a temporary irritation rather than a lasting annoyance. And I also think that as someone who I think this footballocracy, right, is quite hard to square. If you look at the report into why Scottish COVID cases are rising so fast, undoubtedly a part of it, not all of it, but a part of it and the biggest explainer of a gender disparity, I think, which hadn't existed before, is the football. And, you know, there is a thing that politicians across the UK feel that they need to kind of exempt football in a way that they don't need to exempt, you know, weddings or funerals or whatever. I think that is understandably hard and rightly hard for people to take. But I also think cynically, if you end up in a situation where England end up playing a semi-final at Wembley at home, and the government say, well, the price of that was we had to exempt these UEFA people from quarantine, how much people dislike it now, that will become less controversial. But I think this is another reminder that, A, if July the 19th doesn't go ahead, which I think is a very, very remote chance, the government would have a massive problem. And also, I think this is the other problem. Think of that Trevor Phillips question on Sunday to Brandon Lewis. If the government try and bring back restrictions that are onerous, I don't mean the government saying, please wear a face mask on the bus or on the tube or on a train. I mean, stuff that really impacts on people's lives. I think it would be much harder for them because of the accumulated number of instances that cut against this.
And then, James, on 19th July, it's interesting because something that you write about in your politics column in the magazine, which is out tomorrow, but has also been reported elsewhere today, is this idea of the double jab, which being able to be exempt from self-isolation if they come into contact with someone who tests positive for coronavirus, close contact. And it's been hailed as, this is how we get back to normal. But there's a slight problem here, surely, because on the 19th of July, most 30-somethings will not have had their second jab, or at least, mid-30-somethings, and particularly you add that 2 weeks by which point you're supposed to have it. And then if you go from there down the age group, there's a lot of people who will be single jabbed. So we might not be having vaccine passports in all but name, but we are going to see vaccinated people will double treated quite differently. And surely if cases are soaring in the way that they currently are, the government can say, oh, case numbers don't matter, they don't affect things. But it does increase the chance massively of someone going to a restaurant that isn't socially distanced and then being zapped by the app and someone saying you have to give up your life for 10 days. So do you think the government has to lay the groundwork for that bit? Because it could be more dysfunctional than they're currently suggesting.
And again, I think the government are betting, but the fact that everyone is going to get their second jab quite soon means that there will be kind of a general forgiveness on that front, which I think is an interesting bet. I think it's also interesting as the question as to whether the question about you'll need to test yourself daily if you've come into contact with someone who has COVID, will that be in guidance or will that be in law? I mean, that's an interesting question. As I understand it, the requirement to self-isolate if you test positive for COVID will be law. I am unclear as to whether the question about contacts isolating will be guidance or law.
Now, James, elsewhere there's been development when it comes to the Northern Ireland Protocol and there's been an exemption from the EU. Can you talk us through it?
So what the kind of canary in the coal mine of UK-EU relations is this question of sausage and chilled meat.
The sausage war.
Going into Northern Ireland from GB. And the UK had previously unilaterally, there was an initial grace period granted, which the UK then extended unilaterally. It's one of David Frost's first acts on taking over that brief from Michael Gove, which went down very badly with Brussels and the Irish government. The UK then requested an extension, which the EU is granting today. And I think this extension is interesting because on the one hand, you could say this is the beginnings of a kind of diplomatic dance between the UK and the EU. If the UK requests the extension, the EU grants it. But we are still not got a resolution there. But I think we are seeing some hints about what the resolution might look like. So the UK is not agreeing to dynamic alignment with EU rules in this. It is agreeing to a standstill in its own regulations covering this, which I think is significant because EU agri-food rules will change in August. And so there will be a period where the UK, not by any significant way, but the UK and the EU are not perfectly aligned yet. Sausages and other chilled meats are still going in. And then I think the other question is the emphasis that the UK's unilateral declaration puts on labelling as a kind of way to ensure that things do not seep from Northern Ireland into the Republic and thus the single market. But this is a kind of temporary pause rather than a resolution to the whole problem. And the 30th of September is not that far away, and it is by then that they will need to have a fix to the whole protocol issue.
And on that fix, number 10 today, very keen to stress that we're not going near dynamic alignment, which is what the EU side would be quite keen on for lots of reasons. I think it's initially almost a first choice when you're looking at solutions. So is that off the menu, or as we try and find that more permanent solution, are things like that going to come back up?
I don't think the UK will ever accept dynamic alignment. I think the view that David Frost and Boris Johnson hold very strongly is that if one of the UK's first acts as, to use one of their phrases, an independent trading nation, was to choose to align Great Britain with EU agri-food regulations, even if that did not knock out a US trade deal, something that the EU thinks is motivating the UK, but I don't think it actually is, you know, I think they think that that would send out a message that the UK was still in the EU's regulatory orbit, and they think that that would have a negative effect on the UK's ability to strike a different economic and trading path.
Thank you, James, and thank you for listening.